The Girl of the Golden West by David Belasco. Chapter 6, Part 2. "Ramirez," went on the first voice, at which ominous word all, including Ashby, began to exchange significant glances as they echoed, "Ramirez!" The name had barely died on their lips, however, when Nick precipitated himself into their midst and announced that the Pony Express had arrived, handing up to the girl, at the same time, a bundle of letters and one paper. "You see," maintained Ashby stoutly, as he watched her sort the letters, "I was right when I told you. Look sharp! There's a greaser on the trail!" rang out warningly the voice of the Pony Express. "A greaser?" exclaimed Rance, for the first time showing any interest in the proceedings. And then, without looking up, and after the manner of a man speaking to a good dog, he told the deputy, who had followed Nick into the room, "Find him, Depp." For some time, the girl occupied herself with cashing in the chips which Nick brought to her, a task which she performed with amazing correctness and speed, considering that her knowledge of the science of mathematics had been derived solely from the handling of money at the polka. Now she went over to Sonora, who sat at a table reading.
"You got the newspaper, I see," she observed. "But you, Trin, I'm sorry you ain't got nothing," she added, with a sad little smile.
"So long," hollered the Pony Express at that moment, whereupon Ashby rushed over to the door and called after him, "Pony Express, I want you!" Satisfied that his command had been heard, he retraced his footsteps and found Handsome peering eagerly over Sonora's shoulder.
"So, Sonora, you've got a newspaper," Handsome was saying.
"Yes, but the infernal thing's 2 months old," returned the other disgustedly.
Handsome laughed, and, wheeling round, was just in time to see the door flung open and a young fellow advance towards Ashby. The Pony Express was a young man of not more than 20 years of age. He was smooth-faced and unshaven, and needless to say was light of build, for these riders were selected for their weight as well as for their nerve. He wore a sombrero, a buckskin hunting shirt, tight trousers tucked into high boots with spurs, all of which were weather-beaten and faded by wind, rain, dust, and alkali. A pair of Colt revolvers could be seen in his holsters, and he carried in his hands, which were covered with heavy gloves, a mail pouch, it being the company's orders not to let his mochilo of heavy leather out of his hands for a second.
"You drop mail at the Greaser settlement?" inquired Ashby in his peremptory and incisive manner.
"Yes, sir," quickly responded the young man, and then volunteered, "It's a rough place."
Ashby scrutinized the newcomer closely before going on with,
"Know a girl there named Nina Micheltorena?"
But before the Pony Express had time to reply, the girl interposed scornfully,
"Nina Micheltorena? Why, they all know her. She's one of them Cachuca girls with droopy Spanish eyes. Oh, ask the boys about her."
And with that, she started to leave the room, stopping on her way to clap both Trinidad and Sonora playfully on the back.
"Yes, ask the boys about her. They'll tell you."
And so saying, she fled from the room, followed by the men she was poking fun at.
"Hold her letters, you understand?" instructed Ashby, who, with the sheriff, was now alone with the Pony Express.
"Yes, sir," he replied earnestly. A moment later, there being no further orders forthcoming, he hastily took his leave. Ashby now turned his attention to Rance.
"Sheriff," said he, "tonight I expect to see this Nina Micheltorena either here or at the Palmetto."
Rance never raised an eyebrow.
"You do?" he remarked a moment later, with studied carelessness. "Well, the boys had better look to their watches. I met that lady once." Ashby shot him a look of inquiry. "She's looking to that 5,000 reward for Ramirez." Rance's interest was growing by leaps and bounds, though he continued to riffle the cards.
"What? She's after that?"
"Sure thing. She knows something." And having delivered himself of this, Ashby strode over to the opposite side of the room where his coat and hat were hanging upon an elk horn. While putting them on, he came face to face with the girl, who, having merely glanced in at the dance hall, was returning to take up her duties behind the bar. "Well, I'll have a look at that greaser up the road," he said, addressing her, and then went on half jocularly, half seriously. "He may have his eye on the find in that stocking."
"You be darned," was the girl's parting shot at him as he went out into the night.
There was a long and impressive pause in which, apparently, the sheriff was making up his mind to speak of matters scarcely incident to the situation that had gone before, while fully conscious that she was to be asked to give him an answer, she whose answer had been given many times. The girl stood at the bar in an attitude of amused expectancy, and fussing with things there. At length, Rance, glancing shyly over his shoulder to make sure that they were alone, became all at once grave, and his voice fell soft and almost caressingly.
"Say, girl."
The young woman addressed stole a look at him from under her lashes, all the while smiling a wise little smile to herself. But not a word did she vouchsafe in reply. Again, Rance called to her over his shoulder.
"I say, girl."
The girl took up a glass and began to polish it. At last she deigned to favor him with, "Hmm?" Which apparently he did not hear, for again a silence fell upon them. Finally, unable to bear the suspense any longer, the sheriff threw down his cards on the table, and facing her, he said,
"Say, girl, will you marry me?"
"Nope," returned the girl, with a saucy toss of her head. Rance rose and strode over to the bar. Looking fixedly at her with his steely gray eyes, he demanded the reason.
"'Cause you got a wife in New Orleans, or so the mountain breezes say,"
was her ready answer. Rance gave no sign of having heard her. Throwing away the cigar he was smoking, he asked in the most nonchalant manner,
"Give me some of those cigars, my kind."
Reaching for a box behind her, the girl placed it before him.
"Them's your kind, Jack."
From an inside pocket of his broadcloth coat, Rance took out an elaborate cigar case, filled it slowly, leaving out one cigar, which he placed between his lips. When he had this one going satisfactorily, he rested both elbows on the edge of the bar and said bluntly,
"I'm stuck on you."
The girl's lips parted a little mockingly.
"Thank you."
Rance puffed away for a moment or two in silence, and then with sudden determination he went on,
"I'm going to marry you."
"Think so?" questioned the girl, drawing herself up proudly. And while Rance proceeded to relight his cigar, it having gone out, she plumped both elbows on the bar and looked him straight in the eye and announced,
"They ain't a man here going to marry me."
The scene had precisely the appearance of a struggle between two powerful wills. How long they would have remained
with elbows almost touching, and looking into each other's eyes, it is difficult to determine. But an interruption came in the person of the barkeeper, who darted in, calling, "One good cigar!" Instantly the girl reached behind her for the box containing the choicest cigars, and handing one to Nick, she said, "Here's your poison, 3 bits. "Why, look at 'em," she went on in the next breath to Rance. "There's Handsome with 2 wives I know of somewhere east, and—" She broke off short and ended with, "Nick, who's that cigar for?"
"Tommy," he told her.
"Here, give that back," she cried quickly, putting out her hand for it. "Tommy don't know a good cigar when he's smoking it." And so saying, she put the choice cigar back in its place among its fellows, and handed him one from another box, with the remark, "Same price, Nick." Nick chuckled and went out. "And look at Trin with a widow in Sacramento. And you—" The girl broke off short and laughed in his face. "Oh, not one of you traveling under your own name." "One whiskey," ordered Nick, coming into the room with a rush. Without a word, the girl took down a bottle and poured it out for him, while he stood quietly looking on, grinning from ear to ear. For Rance's weakness was known to him, as it was to every other man in Monsonetta County, and he believed that the sheriff had taken advantage of his absence to press his hopeless suit. "Here you be," sang out the girl, and passed the glass over to him.
"He wants it with water,"
returned Nick, with a snicker. With a contemptuous gesture, the girl put the bottle back on the shelf. "No, no, you don't. No fancy drinks here," she objected.
"But he says he won't take it without water,"
protested Nick, though there was a twinkle in his eye. "He's a fellow that just rode in from the crossin', so he says." The girl folded her arms and declared in a tone of finality, "He'll take it straight or git."
"But he won't git,"
contended Nick, chuckling. There was an ominous silence. Such behavior was without a parallel in the annals of Cloudy. For much less than this, as the little barkeeper very well knew, many a man had been disciplined by the girl. So, with his eyes fixed upon her face, he was already reveling in the situation by way of anticipation, and rejoicing in the coming requital for his own rebuff, when the stranger had declined to leave as ordered. It was merely a question of his waiting for the words which would, as he put it, take the fellow down a peg. They were soon forthcoming.
"You just send him to me," said the girl. "I'll curl his hair for him."
Nick's face showed that the message was to his liking. It was evident also that he meant to lose no time in delivering it. A moment after he disappeared, Rance, who had been toying with the $20 gold piece which he took from his pocket, turned to the girl and said with great earnestness,
"Girl, I'll give you $1,000 on the spot for a kiss."
Which offer met with no response other than a nervous little laugh and the words, "Some men invite being played." The gambler shrugged his shoulders.
"Well, what are men made for?"
said he, flinging the gold piece down on the bar in payment for the cigar.
"That's true," placidly commented the girl, making the change.
Rance tried another tack.
"You can't keep on running this place alone. It's getting too big for you. Too much money circulating through the polka. You need a man behind you."
All this was said in short, jerky sentences. Moreover, when she placed his change in front of him, he pushed it back, almost angrily.
"Come now, marry me," again he pleaded.
Nope.
My wife won't know it.
Nope.
Now, see here, there's just one. Nope. Take it straight, Jack. Nope.
She had made up her mind that he had gone far enough, and firmly grabbing his hand, she slipped his change into it. Without a word, the sheriff dropped the coins into the cuspidor. The girl saw the action, and her eyes flashed with anger. The next moment, however, she looked up at him and said more gently than any time yet,
"No, Jack, I can't marry you."
"Ah, come along, start your game again. Go on, Jack."
And so saying, she came out from behind the bar and went over to the faro table with,
"Oop-la! Moolah! Go! Good Lord, look at that faro table!"
But Rance was on the verge of losing control of himself. There was passion in his steely gray eyes when he advanced toward her. But although the girl saw the look, she did not flinch, and met it in a clear, straight glance.
"Look here, Jack Rance," she said. "Let's have it out right now. I run the polka 'cause I like it. My father taught me the business, and, well, don't you worry about me. I can look after myself. I carry my little wepping," and with that she touched significantly the little pocket of her dress. "I'm independent. I'm happy. The polka's paying, and it's bully," she wound up, laughing. Then, with one of her quick changes of mood, she turned upon him angrily and demanded,
"Say, what the devil do you mean by proposing to me with a wife in New Orleans? Now this is a respectable saloon, and I don't want no more of it."
A look of gloom came into Rance's eyes.
"I didn't say anything. Push me that queen," interrupted the girl sharply, gathering up the cards at the faro table and pointing to one that was just beyond her reach.
But when Rance handed it to her and was moving silently away, she added,
"Ah, no offense, Jack, but I got other ideas of married life from what you have."
"Ah, nonsense," came from the sheriff, in a voice that was not free from irritation.
The girl glanced up at him quickly. Her mind was not the abode of hardened convictions, but was tender to sentiment, and something in his manner at once softening her, she said,
"Nonsense? I don't know about that. You see," and her eyes took on a faraway look, "I had a home once, and I ain't forgot it. A home up over our little saloon down in Soledad. I ain't forgot my father and my mother, and what a happy couple they were. Lord, how they loved one another. It was beautiful."
Despite his seemingly callous exterior, there was a soft spot in the gambler's heart. Every word that the girl uttered had its effect on him. Now his hands, which had been clenched, opened out, and a new light came into his eyes. Suddenly, however, it was replaced by one of anger, for the door at that moment was hesitatingly pushed open, and the Sydney Duck stood with his hand on the knob, sniveling.
"Oh, miss, I—"
The girl fairly flew over to him.
"Say, I've heard about you. You git!" she cried.
And when she was certain that he was gone, she came back and took a seat at the table, where she continued in the same reminiscent vein as before.
"I can see Mother now, fussing over Father and petting him, and Father dealing faro. Ah, he was square, and me a kid, as little as a kitten, under the table, sneaking chips for candy. Talk about married life. That was a little heaven. Why, Mother thought so much of that man, she was so much heart and soul with him, that she learned to be the best case-keeper you ever saw. Many a sleeper she caught. You see, when she played,
She was playing for the old man. She stopped as if overcome with emotion, and then added with great feeling, "I guess everybody's got some remembrance of their mother tucked away. I always see mine at the faro table, with her foot snuggled up to Dad's, and the light of lovin' in her eyes. Ah, she was a lady!" Impulsively, she rose and walked over to the bar. "No," she went on, when behind it once more, "I couldn't share that table and the polka with any man unless there was a heap of carin' behind it. No, I couldn't, Jack, I couldn't!" By this time, the sheriff's anger had completely vanished. Dejection was plainly written on every line of his face. "Well, I guess the boys were right. I am a Chinaman," he drawled out. At once the girl was all sympathy. "Oh, no, you're not, Jack," she protested, speaking as tenderly as she dared, without encouraging him. Rance was quick to detect the change in her voice. Now he leaned over the end of the bar and said, in tones that still held hope, "Once when I rode in here, it was nothing but Jack, Jack, Jack Rance. By the eternal, I nearly got you then."
"Did you?" The girl was her saucy self again. Rance ignored her manner and went on,
"Then you went on that trip to Sacramento and Monterey, and you were different."
In spite of herself, the girl started, which Rance's quick eye did not fail to note.
"Who's the man?" he blazed.
For answer, the girl burst out into a peal of laughter.
It was forced, and the man knew it. "I suppose he's one of them high-toned Sacramento shrimps," he burst out gruffly. Then he added meaningly, "Do you think he'd have you?"
At those words, a wondering look shone in the girl's eyes, and she asked, in all seriousness, "What's the matter with me? Is there anything about me a high-toned gent would object to?" And then, as the full force of the insult was borne in upon her, she stepped out from behind the bar and demanded,
"Look here, Jack Rance, ain't I always been a perfect lady?"
Rance laughed discordantly.
"Oh, heaven knows your character's all right."
And so saying, he seated himself again at the table. The girl flared up still more at this. She retorted,
"Well, that ain't your fault, Jack Rance."
But the words were hardly out of her mouth when she regretted having spoken them. She waited a moment, and then, as he did not speak, she murmured in,
"Adios, Jack,"
and took up her position behind the bar, where, if Rance had been looking, he would have seen her start on hearing a voice in the next room, and fix her eyes, in a sort of fascinated wonder, on a man who, after parting the pelt curtain, came into the saloon with just a suggestion of swagger in his bearing. End of chapter 6.